band of his disciples moved gravely through the crowds. At the entranceway to one of the main buildings was a large bronze statue of a dog, a husky, Northeastern's mascot. Prabhupada became amused. Some of the older disciples knew that Swamiji was sarcastically humorous about Americans' attachment to their dogs. Because now people have no interest in God, he would say, therefore they have become devoted to dog. Instead of worshipping G-O-D, materialistic people had become enamored with D-O-G and considered him man's best friend. Some of Prabhupada's disciples had told him strange stories of how Americans pamper their dogs so much that dogs sometimes sit at a dinner table with their masters or receive their master's property through the master's will. Pausing silently, regarding the almost deified form of the dog, Prabhupada scored an unspoken criticism of Western values. About 200 students and a few teachers crowded into the pews of the small chapel. While Prabhupada was cross-legged on a cloth-covered table, Satswarup led the kirtan, playing on a one-headed drum. After the kirtan, Prabhupada leaned forward to the microphone. "Thank you for giving me this opportunity to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead." And he began to lecture about the three aspects of the Absolute Truth, which he compared to the three aspects of the sun: the sunshine, the sun globe, and the sun god. Although the Absolute Truth is one, some persons see him as impersonal, all-pervading light. Some see him as the localized super soul in the heart of all beings, and some see him as Bhagawan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada's talk was very philosophical. Digressing, Prabhupada began talking more about the sun. He said that on the sun there was a presiding deity, Vivaswan. "You can't disbelieve it," Prabhupada said, and he quoted the Mahabharata, that on the sun are living entities with bodies of fire, just as certain living entities have bodies adapted to living in water. So there are living entities that live in fire. The big noonday crowd listened politely. Prabhupada concluded his half-hour lecture by explaining God, the Supreme Being, as the origin of the material, external, and spiritual, internal energies. We, living entities, although spiritual, have marginal position. All of us in this material world are covered by the external energy. The prayer of Hare Krishna means, "Oh, my dear Lord, I am your part and parcel eternally, but some way or other I have fallen in this ignorance of material energy. Kindly lift me up to the spiritual energy." Although Prabhupada invited the audience to stay afterward and speak with his disciples, when the bell rang, the lecture abruptly ended, and most of the students immediately left the chapel to make room for the next group of students. It was the academic factory. Class was over, and Swamiji and his followers should now leave. As Prabhupada was walking down the hall, the wife of one of the college administrators joined him, walking at his side and chatting pleasantly and effusively assuring him that everyone at the university was very glad he had come. She walked with him to the door and then shook his hand. Turning to Satswarup, she exclaimed that everything had gone beautifully, that Swamiji had spoken wonderfully, and that she would send the $100 honorarium in the mail. Feeling excited and successful, the devotees accompanied Prabhupada to the car. Riding back to his house, Prabhupada agreed it had been a successful engagement. The Boston University engagement in spacious March chapel was poorly attended. Despite thousands of students riding the trolleys and going in and out of the luncheonettes and big gray buildings that lined both sides of Commonwealth Avenue for blocks, only half a dozen came to March Chapel to hear Swamiji. The devotees, pained and embarrassed, criticized Satswarup for the turnout. Even the on-stage arrangements were poor, with Prabhupada seated on a too high rickety table. Yet, without hesitation, Prabhupada held a full program, beginning with a kirtan that lasted almost an hour. He requested Brahmananda, visiting from New York, to give an introductory speech. Then Prabhupada spoke, his voice reverberating over the sound system throughout the cavernous, empty chapel. After the lecture, Prabhupada called for questions. A boy, standing at his seat and shouting to make himself heard, asked, "Is this Advaita philosophy?" he challenged. The devotees could tell that this student had come with his own ideas about yoga and Advaita. "Do you know what is Advaita philosophy?" Oh no, excuse me. "Do you know what is Advaita philosophy?" Prabhupada asked. "All is one," the boy replied. "Just as the rivers enter into the ocean, so we all enter into the ultimate oneness." Srila Prabhupada replied that although the river goes to the ocean, its place in the ocean is not permanent. Again, that water evaporates into the sky, forms clouds, and falls back onto the land. To argue that spiritually everything becomes one as the rivers go to the ocean, then the boy would have to accept the actual conclusion. The water again falls back onto the land. Similarly, those spirit souls who try to merge into the absolute must again fall back into the material world. Prabhupada thoroughly defeated the impersonal notion of oneness. The boy sat down silent. There were no other questions. Talking with his disciples afterwards, Prabhupada said sarcastically, "People today do not even know how to ask a good question. These impersonalists always ask the same hackneyed question about the river going into the ocean." On the way back to the temple, some of the devotees continued to grumble about Swamiji's having to go to an engagement with such a poor turnout. Brahmananda warned Satswarup that the next engagement had better not be like this one. Prabhupada was well aware of the worldwide prestige of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in Cambridge. Many Indians went there to study. It was, in fact, an Indian organization that invited Prabhupada to speak. When Prabhupada arrived in the evening, he found over 100 people waiting in the carpeted luxurious student lounge where he was to lecture. Some students were sitting on the floor, while others sat on the leather-upholstered couches and chairs scattered casually throughout the room. Although it was time for the lecture to begin, the devotees had still not arrived with the paraphernalia. There was no flower garland for Prabhupada, no painting of Krishna, and no sign with the Maha Mantra. The audience waited. In anxiety, Satswarup asked Prabhupada, "Can you begin without a painting?" Looking at a large, momentous gathering, Srila Prabhupada said simply, "Painting is not important." He sat on the plain wooden platform and, since the musical instruments had not arrived, asked one of the devotees to play the Hare Krishna album. Prabhupada sat, clapping his hands in time and listening. Prabhupada spoke boldly, challenging the very concepts underlying MIT, where, in this big university, he asks, is a department for studying the technology of the soul, for understanding that principle which distinguishes a living body from a dead body, that principle which when present in the body gives life and when absent brings death. Where is the science to study this all-important principle of life? All those scientists consider life to be merely chemicals or electric impulses, he argued. Still, they are unable to assemble the chemicals and produce life. Why? There is no department in this university for answering this question, and therefore people are in ignorance. They don't know the self, or the next life, or the purpose of human life beyond animal activities. This science, however, is taught in the Bhagavad Gita. After the lecture, there were many questions. What is the symbolism, one student asks, of that object behind you on the stage? Prabhupada turned and beheld a bare U-shaped metal stand. Compliments of the janitor for holding the painting of Krishna that never arrived. This, Prabhupada frowned, I do not know what this is. This is some kind of technological symbol. Another student asked, why do you wear that marking on your forehead? Why do you wear that necktie around your neck? Prabhupada snapped back, annoyed with the question. The student sat down, looking at his necktie. And Prabhupada explained to him that questions about why people dress a certain way are trivial, especially considering the gravity of the present subject matter. When the question and answer period ended, Satswarup stood and briefly addressed the students, inviting them to attend other college lectures by Srila Prabhupada or to come hear him at a temple. Wherever a saintly person goes, Satswarup said, becomes a Tirtha, or holy place. And now, for the month of May, Boston is a Tirtha. So please take advantage of it. As Srila Prabhupada was leaving with his disciples, a group of Indian family members and students came and stood around him, speaking rapidly, challenging him. One student, espousing the philosophy of monism, asserted that the highest expression of the absolute truth was that all is one. Prabhupada tried to make him understand that simply oneness was a rudimentary idea, because from that one come so many variegated manifestations. But the man would not accept defeat, and Prabhupada became excited, arguing with him. Taking the man by the shirt collar, Prabhupada shouted, "You say everything is one, but is this cotton shirt the same as a cotton ball? Why don't you wear a cotton ball instead of this shirt?" The Indian technologists surrounded Prabhupada, raising their voices and arguing. While Prabhupada's disciples looked on anxiously, Govindadasi warned the devotees about Swamiji's health, and Brahmananda and the others smoldered at the offensive Indians. This wasn't the way to speak with a sadhu. Meanwhile, a devotee reported that Prabhupada's car had broken down and someone ran out into the street to get a taxi. The arguing continued. When a taxi finally arrived, a few disciples pushed through the arguers, insisting, "Swamiji, please, your taxi is waiting. It can't wait any longer. You have to go." And they disengaged their spiritual master from the mass of arguing technologists. Prabhupada considered the evening a success. Some of the devotees who had seen the poor attendance at Prabhupada's Boston University lecture feared the same thing might happen at the Harvard School of Divinity. So they suggested Swamiji wait at his apartment while they went ahead to the lecture hall to see how many people would gather. When they saw a decent number gathering, one of them phoned Satswarup that Swamiji should come. Meanwhile, at the lecture hall, Joseph Matthews, a graduate student in Vaishnavism, addressed the audience, describing from the mundane academic viewpoint the history of the Chaitanya movement. Prabhupada, arriving half an hour later than scheduled, led the audience in kirtan and began his talk. He praised the Harvard students as fortunate, citing that according to Vedic literature, aristocratic birth, good education, beauty and wealth are the four chief material opulences. Compared to others in the world, he said, the students at Harvard had all these opulences. If, however, they could increase their good fortune by adding Krishna consciousness, then that would be their perfection. For example, gold is certainly very valuable. But if gold were to have a pleasant fragrance, then it would be even more valuable. Similarly, if these materially fortunate persons could add the spiritual fortune of Krishna consciousness to their life, then that life would be successful. After Prabhupada's talk, Mr. Matthews thanked him for his discourse on Hindu philosophy, but immediately Prabhupada interrupted, "Actually, we are not Hindu," and Prabhupada explained the universality of Krishna consciousness. As the meeting broke, some interested students came forward for more discussion with Swamiji. One Sanskrit student asked, "How can a brahmachari be expected to understand the Gita Govinda since it deals in so many intricacies of man-woman relationships and love affairs?" Srila Prabhupada replied, "Only a brahmachari can understand Gita Govinda because it is not about mundane sexuality. It is the highest spiritual technology of Radha and Krishna." Prabhupada was especially pleased about his Harvard lecture. The next morning, Satswarup went to see him with a check for $125 from Harvard. "That was a very good meeting last night," Prabhupada said. It seemed to the devotees accompanying Prabhupada from one speaking engagement to another that they were the real audience, the ones to whom Prabhupada was speaking. It was for them that he had come to Boston, more than for the 200 students who sat in the chapel at Northeastern until the bell rang, or the technologists in the lounge at MIT who left after the lecture for the movies and the bars. Prabhupada was setting the example of how to preach. It was for them, the ones who would have to carry on the mission in his absence. From morning until night, Prabhupada spoke about Krishna. Although yogis sometimes take a vow of silence to avoid useless, frivolous talk, he said, one who knows Krishna wants to speak 24 hours a day. When you love God, you want to tell others about him, and automatically you write volumes and volumes of books. Of course, many times in the day, Prabhupada was actually silent, alone in his room, but that silence was also Krishna conscious. Sometimes Govinda Dasi would peek in and find him reading the Sanskrit Bhagavatam commentaries, chanting on his beads, or dozing briefly at his desk after lunch. Sometimes he would sing verses from Chaitanya Charitamrita, or walk around the apartment with his hand in his bead bag, chanting to himself and observing his assistants. Govinda Dasi. In Boston, Swamiji would sing for hours from Chaitanya Charitamrita or Srimad Bhagavatam, just singing with the most feeling, all by himself in his room. And I would peek in the keyhole to see how he was. Sometimes I would go in and check on him when he would pause. I would try not to disturb him, just checking. I would just go in to see if he needed anything. Sometimes I would peek in and simply think, who is he? Nobody knows who he really is, or where he really came from, or how great he really is. Especially in Boston, I began to feel very strongly that he was such a great personality, and that I was viewing only a very, very minute glimpse of him, and that actually much, much more was going on than I could realize. Should I stop here? We stop here. Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita Ki Jai. Now we are going to see a lecture of Srila Prabhupada in the audio-video room.